I love a beautiful lawn. You love a beautiful lawn. Everybody loves a beautiful lawn, but they don't love how long it takes and how difficult it can be. And that is where True Green comes into play because it's the easiest and most affordable way to get that beautiful lawn. Let's be real. You've got plenty of other things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. So let True Green take care of all of that hard work while you get to do everything else that you want to do, like go play golf. Here's what you need to do. Visit truegreen.com, okay? It allows you to do you. Let them do the lawn care. And if you visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, that is all guaranteed. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. It's truegreen.com. Get started now.
Freaking first cut. Golly.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your recap episode for this week's Memorial. And joining me to break it all down, Greg Ducharme is here. Greg, what's up?
What's going on, boys? Exciting week. Playoffs galore this week.
Playoffs?
We have one going on right now with the U.S. Women's Open. So exciting stuff. What a Sunday.
That's right. We've got a playoff going on right now on the ladies' side. We'll keep a close eye on that. Mark Immelman also joining us. Mark, I know you don't like playoffs and your one and done guy came out on the wrong side of it, but you still earned plenty of coin this week.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up, but what I do want to say, how's it, boys? If any one of you ever, from now on, if you were watching ladies golf in the U.S. Open, start battling me about driving the ball well and you're going to win the event on Sunday, reference Lexi. And that hole must have looked about this size to her coming down the stretch. You got a putt to win, and I feel so bad for her right now.
She hit, and I'm sure she would describe it this way herself, two very weak putts on 17 and 18. Never gave it a chance. That was tough.
It was sickening, man. And you feel so... As a player, Greg, you can talk to this. I mean, everyone listening to this, you start missing putts and that hole starts looking like a thimble and you feel so helpless. No matter what you try, the ball just will not go into that little cup, for goodness sake.
Well, I mean, the other thing, too, is there's a defense mechanism that you build up. She had it at 8 under. Right? What was her lead? It was 4?
She was 5 clear when she got to 9-tee.
Yeah, she's 5, and then all of a sudden gets to 11, a little bit of a suspect chip there, 14, another one not so good, and all of a sudden it starts slipping away. And now it's more than just, well, I haven't made any putts. It's I can't believe I'm giving this away. And you start to feel like it's slipping, and it's a different emotional level when you're losing a tournament and you're giving away a tournament rather than putts just aren't going in. It adds an extra element to it. So it was tough. It was tough to see.
You bring up a good point because you call it slipping away. I mean, when you've got your hands on the rubber end of the golf club, it is getting tugged away from you in a hurry. And there's an inevitability about it. Everybody knows it, including yourself. And that's the worst thing because there's almost nothing you can do.
Yeah, it's a sinking feeling for sure. We're going to get a resolution to this event. And we'll talk about that after we chat about what went down at the Memorial. And gentlemen, we've had to reset this Sunday. So let's just go through the quick John Rahm debrief here. I don't think we've had a chance to talk to either of you. No, it was KP and I last night after the news broke and we haven't had a chance to connect. So let's start with this. John Rahm, of course, 18 under par after the third round, 6 shots clear, test positive for COVID. And he is set to potentially be back Tuesday of U.S. Open week if all goes well. Mark, you have been on site. You have been up close and personal. You have an intimate knowledge of PGA Tour protocols. When this news came out, right after we got done recording, by the way, on Saturday evening, what was your reaction?
Shock. was my first reaction. Honestly, my wife and I had a dinner to go to, and we were in the car. And, you know, I'm trying to be a smart boy and not fiddle with my phone when I'm driving. And the phone starts buzzing, and Tracy checks it, and she goes, "There's something about John Rahm, you know, blowing the, well, not blowing the event, but being out because of COVID." And I was like, "You're kidding." So she starts searching all of a sudden. Then I call Jacob, and he goes, "No worries. We got Kyle and Rick are going to come on to talk about this." So I was shocked because nothing was released about the fact that he was in the COVID protocols, given the what's the term? You know, he came into contact with someone who was COVID positive, so he was kind of on the watch list or whatever the case might be. Contact tracing. That's a thank you. And then you have a couple of negative tests, then all of a sudden you have that one positive test. And I can't speak to what he was going through or the way that it was dealt with. You know, it is what it is, because they got the COVID results late Saturday afternoon while he was on the course. But I can talk to you as a guy who's been to PGA Tour events, and people are sort of relying on you to not be COVID positive. And I can speak to that time you're waiting in your hotel room or you're waiting for a COVID result. And your mind plays all manner of tricks on you. You know, when we used to get in there on Mondays, test, then quarantine Tuesday, hopefully you're clearer than you work Wednesday onwards. And then you test at the end of the week to be able to travel too. There's always this unease about you. And I'm sure you had some of that going on. And that makes that Saturday round he put together even more impressive, because the guy was just like a superhero. But I can imagine just how you must tumble from the highest of highs. You've built a 6-stroke lead. Everybody, including your competition, are essentially giving you the event already. You walk off the green, yeah. Then you get the news like that. I mean, that has got to take you from the highest of highs to the lowest of lows. So I was shocked. I feel sorry for him. I wish him and his family all of the best. Remember, they've got a little one in the household right now, and they're going to have to stay in Dublin, wherever they're staying over there. I'm sure I would think that there'd be a nice intimate place for him to practice some golf to lead into the US Open in a few weeks' time. But it's just crazy. And it's sad that it would happen to a guy that had built such a commanding lead in such a prestigious event.
We talked, Greg, Kyle and I, last night about how really no matter what the outcome of this event was going to be, John Rahm was going to be the story. Now, the boys did try to change that storyline, but Patrick Cantlay was, of course, asked after his victory today about how he was able to reset, right? We've talked a lot of this about from John Rahm's perspective. We've talked a lot of it from the PGA Tour's perspective. Now we're hearing how it was for the actual competitors and how they went from being 6 shots back to tied for the lead.
Yeah, what a change of pace. I mean, you're approaching around 6 back is you're basically firing at everything, right? You got to try to go crazy and catch John Rahm, and all of a sudden you're tied. What a dramatic change of pace, which I think is in a way difficult to deal with. But at the same time, you got a chance to win an event, and there's nothing anybody can do about it. It's just unfortunate. And these are the protocols. And like Mark said, it is what it is. So everybody kind of knew that this was a possibility when golf came back. The hard thing is we kind of feel like we're past it, right? We have fans back. Things are, you know, a lot of places are alleviating mask rules. Things are kind of many people are getting vaccinated, and it kind of seems like we're through it, and then we have to be reminded of it in this way. So all being said, all the protocols and everything has worked so well so far to make this the only real incident that dramatically affected competition. I think it's still, you know, it's just tough, but I love the way John Rahm handled it. And then Cantlay, Morikawa, those guys, they really, and Scottie Scheffler too, they came out ready to go. You could tell they were a little nervous. There was a couple of squirrely shots out there early, but down the stretch, you got a sense that wasn't really on their mind. They were focused. They were in the zone. They were ready for that, and they both gave it their best to hold that trophy.
Yeah, we can talk about that playoff. Also, I don't know if it is impressive or disappointing of the number of messages that I got that said, what's going to happen with my John Rahm bet? I had him to win. He was six shots clear. Yeah. Well, that was kind of 10th or 11th on my list of priorities. However, some books, our friends over at William Hill, did pay those out in full. So if you were making your wagers with William Hill, they took good care of you. All right, gentlemen. We did get a winner. It took one playoff hole, but Patrick Cantlay was victorious. He and Morikawa matched 71s on Sunday, and Cantlay made a par on 18, which was the first playoff hole, to hoist the trophy here at Jack's Place. And Mark, we'll start here with you. Patrick Cantlay gets his fourth career PGA Tour victory. He had been mired in a bit of a mini slump for the past couple of months, but this is certainly one way to break out. Winning the Memorial for the second time.
Yeah, I'll say, and what I want to, the observation I'd like to make is something I mentioned on last night's pod that became moot given the John Rahm debacle.
That's the lost episode, Mark. It never made it to air.
Well, good. This is fresh information then. I mentioned last night that in watching him play and having seen the little mini slump he was going through, I was just so impressed at his approach and his instructor Jamie Mulligan's approach to the poor play. There never seemed to be any panic. There wasn't anything changing. They just stuck to their guns. They stuck to the plan. It was very much an issue where they were working on shot making and not starting to tool on technique, which is the, I think sometimes, and I say this with respect, kind of the intellectually lazy way for golfers to approach bad play. They start chopping and changing on technique, or, you know, sometimes they might change golf clubs. I saw him change a putter style, but it was with the same manufacturer. And there was no real, reaction to stuff. And Patrick Cantlay just kept on taking one stride after the other. You could see him begin to gain a little traction. PGA Championship, he was decent. And then from there, it just kept on building. And I was then equally as impressed today when it started off a little scrappy. But then when the chips were down, he hit some quality shots coming in. I mean, that 8-iron to 16 with nothing but kingdom come on the left-hand side, and you won back to fizz it in there to 10 feet. And that was awesome. Then to hit it over the top of the flag on 17, that was incredible. And then, yeah, he did blow a couple tee shots wide right, but he had quality shots from there. And, man, he nearly won the thing in regulation with an incredible putt down that hill. So the mental moxie, the emotional control that Patrick Cantlay possesses, it's going to stand him in good stead, because there's one guarantee in golf. Everybody and everyone, no one's immune to this. You will have hiccups. You'll have bumps in the road. You'll have slumps. And he has now shown that he can navigate this and not just come back. He can come back quickly and win around a very demanding golf course. And this should speak to who he is as a player and a human being.
He missed a putt on 18 in regulation on the pro side, the top side. It was a great looking putt the entire way. His putt, Greg, in the playoff on virtually the same line. So once you give him a look at it, you know he wasn't going to miss that, and he didn't. And now this actually thrusts him to number one in the FedEx Cup. This is his second win this year, or this season, I should say, because the other victory was the Zozo Championship, the one that was played at Sherwood. So Patrick Cantlay, Greg, to the list of multiple winners on tour this season.
Yeah, they're starting to pile up now. You're starting to feel like the guys that are, the upper echelon player, they're starting to find their stride a little bit. We saw it with John Rahm. We all know what happened there. Clearly feeling his stride, despite everything that happened. And now you got Patrick Cantlay coming around. You have Jordan Spieth is joining the upper echelon group of guys again. And Rory McIlroy, although the last 2 weeks didn't go great, he was able to get a recent win. So you have some stars that are starting to play really well, and there are guys that are capable of winning multiple times the way Patrick Cantlay has. But you look at his stats for the year, and he's so well rounded. It's kind of a sign of what it takes to be a PGA Tour player. He does all of those things so well. And the thing that amazed me about this round that he played today was what happened at number two, Right, he makes a bogey at number one from the middle of the fairway, and it's kind of disappointing. He hit it into that front bunker from the middle of the fairway, so or the left bunker. So that was no good. Then he hits it out of play, nearly out of play, into the trees on the left-hand side at two, finds an alley, gets it to 44 feet, and makes it. And it's like just that ability to score, the ability to get it done no matter what happens, is I think what separates PGA Tour players from non-PGA Tour players, or should I say PGA Tour players that win a lot and PGA Tour players that don't win a lot. When you have that ability to score just because in any situation, it's amazing. And then you saw him find his rhythm. So that putt on number two really saved him because he lost it was a shaky start for him. And then it gave him that ability to find his rhythm and stay patient and still play the right shot and give himself opportunities. And even though he didn't make a lot of putts that you think maybe he could have made, he made a lot of putts you didn't think he would make. And that was kind of a little bit different than Morikawa, but very interesting. And it was a gutsy performance.
It was a shaky start for Colin Morikawa as well. At the end of the day, he carded a 71, as did Cantlay, but he bogeyed one. He bogeyed four. He bogeyed six. So he was two over through his first six holes, but he was able to grind it back, Mark. He was able to get himself back into this thing. And then I think maybe, I don't want to say this was controversial, but the interesting thing happened on number 17 today where I would say the skies opened up. Torrential downpours. It was biblical, and Morikawa was scrambling to throw, you know, the rain glove on and pull out the umbrella and all that good stuff. He hits a chip on the side of 17 that wasn't particularly good, left himself with 10 feet, and then the PGA Tour official comes in and they call a pause in play, which I'm not sure I've seen this often, right? Just stand pat, essentially, while this rain rolls through. And of course, some people question the fairness of this, the timing of it, because it rained for about 2 minutes before they were able to get back to action, before Morikawa would end up burying that putt, which I thought was an absolute stones move.
Yeah, it was. But for Cantlay to make the putt before him, I mean, that yep. was equally as impressive given the break. But to that situation, I've been out there before when I wouldn't say the event had essentially become between a handful of guys, but that was the case. That made the decision for the tour a little easier. But we must remember that behind the scenes, they've got a really sharp staff of meteorologists that know exactly what's going on, and they must have felt that with that squall that came through, there was a high chance of maybe greens flooding given hole location and stuff like that. So they just paused them in case they need to just, you know, move water or whatever the case might be. So I didn't think it was that bad a move. They knew how long the thing was going to last. I think it was just precautionary. And, you know, if it was earlier in the day, it would have been everybody. It was late in the day. A number of folks were finished and there were only, what, two groups on the golf course. So I don't think it was that big a deal. And I believe it sort of stood Scotty Scheffler in good stead too, because otherwise he'd be having to stand there over a putt that he ended up missing. So I guess it's a moot point, but standing there in a downpour over something that was very telling. So it's happened before. It is what it is. The tourists are good at making decisions like that because they've got such good information on hand all of the time.
Yeah, they were certainly all over the forecast. I think Ken Tackett said this is going to last for 3 minutes. Sure enough, 3 minutes later, it is gone. And Greg Devil's advocate here says that's fine. You know, there's only four guys left on the golf course. It's not really impacting anyone. But the perception of trying to time it right, picking and choosing when we are going to stop play instead of forcing Cantlay to essentially have to hit his 23 footer in the pouring rain, letting him wait 3 or 4 minutes. I think it's the perception issue more than it actually impacted the tournament, because I don't believe that it did.
Yeah, well, I mean, it definitely impacted the tournament, right? But I don't think it did in an unfair way. It didn't impact it. It improved the tournament, I would say, but it definitely affected it. If he had, I mean, that was one of the more exciting moments of the tournament when he made it, and then Morikawa comes in there with that highly pressure. I mean, a two-shot swing there would have been brutal. And maybe the perception would have changed if he missed that. And you say, well, hang on a second. He got the short end of the stick there. But ultimately, this is an outdoor game, and you got to play in elements. And sometimes it becomes a little bit too much. So for something that was just 3 minutes, I don't have a problem with it at all. I think it made sense. I think it was the right move. And I do think it was fair for the most part. So ultimately, I think it led to a great finish. Whereas if they had played and maybe they hit their tee shots on 18 and that kind of stuff, where when Morikawa has a lead, it changes the 18th hole entirely. And I really like the way that it played out. Regardless of who you're rooting for, it was pretty cool to see.
We are just a few very small things away, Mark, from Colin Morikawa maybe having 6 wins already. You know what I mean? Or maybe more. If he comes out victorious on this playoff, which he certainly could have. I mean, he missed. It was certainly no gimme putt for par on the first playoff hole. I think it was 7 feet or something like that. He makes that. They keep going. Maybe he wins. We know the missed putt that he had at Colonial that cost him an opportunity to win that event. Already with 4 on the resume, if everything kind of shakes out in his favor, you're looking at a really prolific start to a career.
Well, I guess it's putting to bed the whole Matthew Wolff, Victor Hovland, Sung J.M., Jaco Niemann conversation, right?
I think we can pin that for a while. Yeah.
And a few folks have sort of intimated as such, but you never know in golf. But the one thing about Colin Morikawa, apart from a putter that's a little on the streaky side and he can run hot and cold on the greens, the guy is complete. Everyone talks about how he hits it. I want to say to you, the times I've been around him, the times I've watched him go about his craft on the golf course, the guy is the ultimate professional. He is just so sharp. He's so measured. He just seems, well, I'll make an NFL analogy, not that I know that much about it, but if you watch the veteran NFL quarterback, things move fast when you get in the league, but they just always have time. You watch Tom Brady, he never looks flustered. Stuff is just mayhem going on around him, and he just stays in there. He goes through the reads and makes the right decision. That is Colin Morikawa. And in the very end, you know, this game there at Jack's event, it's a game that's won with a 15th club. That golf club between your ears, the brain and the mind and that sort of stuff. And he is just so mentally acute, and he's so sharp, and he makes the right decisions all of the time. And then you watch how polished he was when he goes past Jack Nicklaus after just missing a short putt to extend a playoff. He was, I'm sure, chap at that stage, but stopped, talked, wasn't rushed, said all the right things. The guy is complete. And it's nice for me to see him doing what he's doing. And I look forward to him staying healthy and continuing to build on this, because he's been a pro for how long now? And he's still learning. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
2 years ago today. Yeah.
Well, he played in his first PGA Tour event. He played in his first. Well, was that as a pro, Rick?
As a pro, RBC Canadian, I believe it was.
It was as a pro. I didn't know if it was his first event. Yeah, I guess that makes more sense.
It wasn't. He played like 2 or 3 events before that, I believe, as an amateur.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's unbelievable stuff, Greg. Let me tee up on this, because the one thing that we heard about Colin Morikawa coming out of college, and I remember this vividly, it was always he's wise beyond his years. He's so mature. You wouldn't believe he's 21 or 22. And I remember brushing that off. Right. That's what everybody says. Or it's like every prospect in the NFL or any sport. It's like, oh, he's in the best shape of his life in training camp. You hear the same things over and over. I didn't know what to expect. He literally is mature, like 10 years older than he actually is in the brain. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, he understands the game. And to Mark's point, he understands how to prepare. He understands how to get himself ready. He understands how to score. The thing that amazed me today about Colin Morikawa, and it continues to, is when there's something in his game that's weak for a day, which it is usually for a day. Maybe putting's a little more consistently weak. But when it's weak for a day, he figures out how to score. And if he hits it great with his irons, then that's great. He scores whether he putts well or not. If he's accurate off the tee, then that's great. He'll figure out a way to score whether he putts or not. if he's not hitting it well, like he did today. I mean, he was 53rd approaching the green today. He hit nine of 18 greens of regulation today. This is the player who leads the PGA Tour in greens of regulation. He hit 8 of 14 fairways, which is not a great day for a Colin Morikawa. Yet he figures out how to get the job nearly done. I mean, he gets himself into a playoff and very nearly won the thing in regulation. But he does it with the putter. All of a sudden, he makes every single putt he needed to make. That putt at 17, I mean, there were so many that he made. I would say at least there were at least six putts from that 7 to 12 foot range that you feel like you should make and you want him, and he made them all today until the playoff, really, which was probably even outside of that range. So it was an amazing performance on the greens and not an easy thing to do for a guy who that's not really his DNA, but he showed that he could figure out how to score, and that's what prolific winners do.
I want to build on that. That's a fantastic take there. If you watched what he went about doing, because we look, let's be honest, we're playing in a power game now. Everybody knows this. Everyone's figuring that this is how you're going to gain, or you're going to separate yourself from competition. But here's Colin Morikawa, who didn't know where the thing was going, to be honest with you, over the first 7, 8, 9 holes, which was surprising. But there were a number of situations where he went with fairway metal off the tee, even on a hole like the 10th, which is mammoth. I mean, the thing is 480 uphill the entire way. He's gone with the 3-wood off the tee. And that just speaks to the patience that he has, to the, okay, I know how to play this game, as opposed to just bludgeoning your way away and hopefully drawing a lie in the rough and trying to get the ball on the green. Just like a Tiger Woods, Morikawa knows, hold on, I can contend if you give me an iron in my hand out of the fairway. So if I need to go with less power off the tee to get myself into that situation, I'm going to do it. And that, again, speaks to just the maturity and the awareness of who he is and what he's got.
Mark, to that point, real quick. If you know you can hit a 5-wood the way Colin Morikawa can, right at the flag, or a 3-iron, or whatever club is in your bag, it almost doesn't matter. It's like a video game. He's just got to click the club up button once, and it's the same thing. So having that confidence in your long game is such an asset. It allows you to make the right decision off the tee, to your point, Mark.
Yeah.
I swear I've never seen him hit that 5-wood more than 1 yard off the pin. It's unbelievable what he does with that thing. The third horse, the guy who really took advantage of the early stumbles of Patrick Cantlay and Colin Morikawa, was Scottie Scheffler, who, Mark, was 3 under par through his first 5 holes, had the outright lead at one point at 12 under in this event. We saw him hit a cold, I don't want to say it. He shanked one, Mark. Still looking for that first PGA Tour victory, but we've seen him time and time again continue to knock on the door. He's done it in big time events as well. Seems like it's just a matter of time.
I watch Scottie Scheffler play, and I sort of think of a young Phil Mickelson, maybe a young David Duval. You know, they all heralded coming out, and then they just, you know, Phil won early, but Duval, it took him a while to knock off that first victory, and then he just sort of went crazy, if you will. And it was a question of these individuals that are supremely talented. They've got their own technique, and they sort of just struggle to slip the thread through the aisle of the needle, or to just, you know, finish that last thing that they need to do to win. And right now I watch Scheffler play, and it just appears to me always, Greg, that there's going to be a hiccup somewhere, and that's when he least wants it to happen, whether it's a shank shot or whether it's a wild tee shot or whether it's a short putt missed. There is that little thing to him. But let's not forget, this guy is still, he's still just a pup, right? And he's just so good, and he's going to figure it out. My wish for Scheffler is that he doesn't go changing who he is. I don't think he will, because Randy Smith is a legend, a golf instructor who consults to him, and he must just stay the course. You know, it's going to be frustrating when you blow a few leads and you don't finish it off, but just stay where you are, Scotty. Don't change, because he's going to find his way into the winner's circle. Of that, I'm pretty well convinced.
Yeah, and it could happen quite frequently when it does, because he's really good. But Mark, to that point about how something kind of in the like Phil Mickelson way, there seems to be that disaster lurking around the corner with Scottie Scheffler. That comes from aggressive play. And while aggressive play can at times lose you tournaments, it also wins you a lot of tournaments.
Yeah.
And he is not afraid to go at flags. And I thought it was really cool watching him today take on the water and continuously like the shot at 16, I think it was, where he hit it left of that flag. I mean, I'm not advocating that you hit it left of that hole there, but the point is he's going for it. He's not afraid. He plays with no fear. And I don't get the sense when I watch Scottie Scheffler, I don't get the sense that he's afraid of winning. Even though he hasn't yet.
No.
It doesn't seem like that's a big hurdle for him. It just seems like it hasn't happened yet.
I wouldn't say so. And just to sort of put a bow on it, I guess, I just have my concerns about the loose footwork. Now, I know we stay in an era where there's power and you use ground reaction forces and stuff like that, but there's a lot of lateral going on with him and a lot of sliding around the place. And when that starts to happen, as you know, the base of your swing arc is moved. So you might be setting up to hit a fade shot, but all of a sudden the swing path is too far inside out, and then you tweak one and you hit one left. Or then off an uneven lie, like on 9, you come in too far from the inside on one that you're trying to carve, and then you hit the inside of your golf club. So I think that's a situation too where, yeah, by all means do that off the tee, but when you've got to hit a quality shot, plug yourself to the ground a little bit, tighten up, which I'm sure he'll do, and then he'll hit those shots, those precision shots that are requiring that are required when you're attacking a whole location like 16, for argument's sake.
I might be out on Scheffler. My name's Kyle Porter. I work for CBSSports.com. I'm on the First Cut podcast. I might be out on Scheffler. Like, go win something.
He's trying.
Yeah, he's trying.
I mean, he's contended. He's contended a lot, though. It's not like I feel like it's not the backdoor top tens. It's like when he was in contention at, I guess not this most recent PGA championship, but the one, I feel like he's actually contended.
That's fair. That's a good point. I was watching him and Morikawa today, and I think Mark will love this. I think Morikawa has this just thing about him that is just, you can't explain it with statistics. You can't use metric. Like, he just has something about him that he is going to win a lot. Like, he runs toward the lead instead of away from it. And it seems like there's a lot of guys out there that they don't do that. They kind of run away from leads, from leading a tournament. And I love watching that about Morikawa. And I don't know. I haven't seen that on, like, late in a tournament from somebody like Scheffler. Now, is it unfair to Scheffler to compare him to Colin Morikawa? Probably, but that's just kind of what I was thinking about today as I was watching.
Well, what a great model to follow, right? Well, you're going to watch a guy, watch Colin Morikawa, because Scottie Scheffler should be able to contend the way Morikawa does. He should be able to, he can play with him, right? It's just, what does Morikawa do that is it, right? What is it? What does he do that allows him to win and keep Scottie Scheffler from winning? I think it's something that'll learn. Maybe it's a little of the nuance that Mark talked about with the iron play. Maybe it's something that's a little more unexplainable. But I love the way that Morikawa was able to lean on the putter today.
I want to call to your observation. I want to turn that around and say, okay, just go win. Because you ask these guys what would be a good career. Because we're quicker, and this is with the mistake that we make as members of the media. We're very current, and it's the next great thing. And last week it was Brooks and Bryson. Now all of a sudden it's John Rahm and COVID. And we're like little ants scurrying about the place for the next great content and the next story. Where if these guys like Colin Morikawa, he looks awfully patient about what he does. And like I said, the craft and the golf course, he's never in a rush. He lets things come to him. And it's like he's looked at himself to say, okay, if I stay healthy, I'm going to play golf for 30 years. And in 30 years, I want to win X number of events. And I look at Scottie Scheffler, and he's talented, but I would say if he accumulates more than 8 wins in his career, that would be a big career, I think. And I don't want to handcuff him. You don't know for certain. But I know a number of really talented golfers that have only won 5 times on the PGA Tour in their career, or less. So this just go win thing, yeah, that's fair to say, but you got to look at this going, well, take the 36,000 foot view thing. And Scottie Scheffler, when it's all said and done, in your opinion, how many wins do you think he should have?
Oh, I don't know. I think 8 is a lot in this era. I think that's mm-hmm. a ton. I think 5 is a lot. I think my point is it's almost more like if Scottie Scheffler had, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 wins over the course of his career with like maybe a major or something, maybe 2 majors, that'd be a really good career. Like kind of Fowler-ish. I don't know. Fowler will probably end up with more than 5 or 6. I think my thing is like, okay, you're like, are you like, I don't like the in-between. Are you Max Homa, where you kind of progressively get better and then you eventually win? Or are you Colin Morikawa, where you come out and just win right away? I feel like Scheffler is a little bit in between, and it kind of works against him in terms of the way we view him. It's the Finau thing. He's always near it, but he doesn't finish it. He doesn't get it done. So yeah, I'm being unfair to Scheffler right now, but he's also in contention a lot and doesn't cross the finish line.
Or hasn't. I mean, you got to look at what I think with John Rahm this week, we saw something, we were about to see something pretty important. It has this is what we talked about on Tuesday, Kyle. That John Rahm's year doesn't look great right now because there's no one in the column. Right. There's no win in the column, but you start looking at his statistics, you start looking at all the top fives and all the top tens that he's had, the percentage of top tens and the events that he's played. And as soon as you add a win on there, all of a sudden it's everything before it looks great. Of course he won. We saw this coming for over a year. And with Scottie Scheffler, a win at the U.S. Open, he is the game to do that. If he goes and wins the U.S. Open, or he wins at Congaree, or he wins at the John Deere Classic, if he wins on the PGA Tour this year, it'll change, in my opinion, it'll quickly change the viewing opinion, and it'll look like a much stronger career than it is. Now, it can go the other way. It can go the Finau way. But I think I really like Mark's point about looking at it from 36,000 feet, looking at it like Phil Mickelson, where he's seen great progress. We don't see it, but then all of a sudden he wins the PGA. He's the only one that saw it coming because he knows what steps he's taking. And so I think from what I've seen from Scotty, because of the consistency and contending, I think he is taking the right steps, and I do think he'll learn. And he is part of the reason why it's so hard to win 8 times or 5 times, because there are so many other guys just like him.
To put a bow on Greg's point, if John Rahm would have won this week, it would have been 17 events, 11 top tens, a runner-up, and a victory. Would have been a hell of a year.
It's ridiculous.
And we were talking about what a disappointment he had been before that.
Yeah.
Is that this season?
That would have been this season. It's 2021.
Yeah, this season. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, he's the best player in the world, right?
Well, we would have. That would have been the conversation we were having.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
he's the best player in quarantine right now.
That's for sure. Scottie Scheffler, solo third. Brandon Gray, solo fourth. Patrick Reed, solo fifth. That rounds it out. KP, you popped in after your obligations. We are still waiting on a winner. We could get one here soon for the U.S. Women's Open, but is there anything you want to go back on? We've talked about Morikawa. We talked about the rain delay. We talked about Cantlay. We talked about Scheffler. Anything you want to touch on?
We do have a winner.
Did she make it? Oh, there it is. Yeah, she made it. We can go to that. You want to talk about the U.S. Women's Open?
Well, so here's what I was thinking about as it relates to Memorial and the U.S. Women's Open is it's the week of, and we talked about this with Phil at the PGA, and you and I talked about it, Rick, I think on Saturday night. It's the week of the player that didn't win being the story. Like, yeah. Cantlay Morikawa, that was great. That's not the story. The story is John Rahm. The playoff at the U.S. at Olympic is great. That's not the story. The story is Lexi Thompson shooting a 41 on the back nine. And I think I don't know. Is there like a ton to take away there? I don't know. But I do think it's interesting that so much of what we talk about revolves around stars and kind of these dramatic narratives. It's all about it. Like, what we discuss is all about what is the most dramatic thing And this week it was John Rahm being told that he had to withdraw from the tournament and Lexi Thompson leaving like six putts short on the back nine. And I don't know, that to me kind of stood out in a week of great golf, that it's unfortunate that those were probably the two biggest storylines of the week.
Yuka Saso just won the 76th U.S. Women's Open, her first major victory, with a birdie on the third playoff hole. But as Kyle is alluding to, Mark, it's Olympic and the maybe Olympic curse that is the storyline, because per our Justin Ray, 54 hole leaders at the Olympic Club are now 0-4-6 in closing out U.S. Opens in both the men's and the women's category. It is also, I suppose, not that easy to close out a major victory.
Yeah, well, it's such a great venue, and you're going to see four seasons in 1 week over there, which makes it awesome. The golf course is demanding from start to finish. And if you think about those leads that were blown, all of them were dramatic and flameouts of note, because the golf course is the ultimate U.S. Open venue to me. It's going to work you over mentally as good as anyone in the game. There's not a level lie on the place. It's like Augusta National that way. You have that cold sea air that comes in there that makes the golf ball go nowhere. And then you add to that some Pioneer greens will drive you bananas. We saw that with Lexi Thompson. So it's a tremendous spot. Kudos to Yuka Saso for hanging on, because she had went in the tank early too. And it essentially looked like a coronation for Lexi Thompson. But once again, it just proves that golf is that thing where you've just got to hang around, just keep yourself in the game somehow. And you never know when the thing is going to go your way. And this time it worked out well for her. So congratulations. But me personally, I'm sickened for Lexi. I mean, this is going to scar her. You know, you had the event, I think it was maybe at the A&A Inspiration. So there's a few dramatic stumbles on her behalf. And it's hard to come back for this sort of stuff. And she's, I've got high respect for her as an athlete and a person.
Saso started her day making par on the opening par five. She doubled number two, doubled number three. She was three over par. She fought it back, played great over her final handful of, 12 or 13 holes to get into this playoff before eventually taking it down. And Greg, the emotion from Lexi Thompson continues, as you can imagine. Her post-round presser was not the greatest scene. You could tell she was very emotional. She answered two questions before her agent said, I think that'll be enough for this evening. Unfortunately, probably something that will stick with her for quite some time.
Yeah, this can happen. You put so much work, you put so much effort into winning major championships, right? Winning golf tournaments, getting your game to its very peak. And when you reach that peak a little bit earlier than, Sunday afternoon, it can be a little bit disappointing, and it can be a letdown. If you told Lexi at the beginning of the week she was going to go out there and shoot three under, she'd probably think she had a great chance. But when you reach eight under in the final round, and that's the way you do it, it feels extremely disappointing. So I know Lexi's been working on her attitude a little bit, becoming a little bit more positive. I think that's something that could maybe go a long way, but it will certainly be tested. But if she can stick to the course and continue to do those things, work on those things, some areas of her game were definitely highlighted as weakness. And hey, that could propel her forward to some pretty great things.
To talk about her attitude after carding a 41 on her second nine, blowing a five shot lead, KP, she goes into the scoring tent, signs for that disastrous 75 that's going to haunt her, and then she came out and signed autographs for all the fans waiting for her. Class act, Lexi Thompson.
Yeah, I don't have great takes on this because I'm sort of following. I'm watching Cantlay and Morikawa, but the thing that I took away from the back nine, and I like Lexi. I think she is. I mean, she's been doing this for 15 years. It's crazy. But I thought her reaction to everything was kind of bizarre, like the way that she was reacting during the round, not after the round. After the round, I haven't really seen a ton. It's great that she was signing autographs. But I thought in the round, she was kind of like, it was almost I think Nolan Up said this. It was almost like she was in shock. Like she was like laughing and smiling. And you're like, wait a second. Like it didn't match up with what was happening on the course. And the whole thing was tough to watch. And it's cool that, yeah, it's a bummer for her. Cause that is it's Spieth and 16 at the Masters, right? Nobody talks about Danny Willett winning the 16 Masters. It's Jordan Spieth losing it.
Of course she was in shock. Sorry, Rick. Of course she was in shock. And like we said earlier, when it starts, Greg used the term slipping away from you. Everybody knows it, including you. And there's nothing you can do about it. And you feel so exposed. And I guarantee you the lion's share of the fans there were pulling for Lexi and they couldn't even help her hold it back up. So it's just a horrid place to be. And that happens in any sport. But the problem with golf is it's like everybody has, well, especially Lexi in the situation, has the timeout called on her between every shot. So you hit the shot, and then you got this time that your mind can wander, and you know the thing's going in the tank, and you're trying your best, and you feel so exposed. It is just, what did that guy in that movie, Keanu Reeves, they called it Quicksand. Remember the Quicksand thing, whatever that football movie was there, where the Replacements or whatever it was. You just feel like you're drowning in your own emotions, and it's terrible. Just terrible.
Remember that guy in that movie.
I know. I did not know where he was going with
it. It was Keanu Reeves. It was the Replacements. Yeah, Replacements. Yes. That's it. Yeah. Quicksand. Yeah,
I just Googled it. Yeah. to put a bow on the U.S. Women's Open, Greg, Shan Shan Fang took a little bit of heat last week for deciding to bow out of her consolation match at the match play. And she said, you know what? I'm tired. I'm going to go prepare for our U.S. Open, and sure enough, maybe a little rest worked because she finished T4, and I think goes a long way in silencing some of those critics.
Yeah, I'm still one of those critics. I don't think it has to.
I know, that's why
results,
I asked you.
Right? Yeah. So I don't like
I love
the move.
It. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, look, she played great here. She's a great player. My position wouldn't change even if she won, and for her own game, she may have made the right choice. It looks financially she made the right choice, right? I haven't seen the numbers, but I'm sure that that it was worth it financially. It still bothers me the obligation you have to the LPGA match play, to Arya Jutanugarn, to her fans, to Shan Shan's fans. The whole thing, it just doesn't sit right with me. It bothers me. I think you have an obligation to finish what you start. So a little bit disappointing, but hey, great playing. She's a wonderful player. I love what she has to say in interviews.
She's the best.
At least her personality. She's got a really strong personality. So very good things to say about her. Just I don't really like that decision she made last.
So if her back was a little tender, would that have made it better for you? Because that happens often, buddy. Let me tell you.
Yeah, yeah, I know it does. And there, it that bothers me if it's a little tender, right? You're using air quotes. That bothers me because it's the same thing. It doesn't change anything. It's still the integrity of what you're doing in the event. But I understand a real injury, Jason Day's injury this week. I completely understand. Go ahead, Kyle.
Well, I respect the fact that you're not using like an outcome to change what your initial take was. Like it shouldn't be like what she did this week. It should just be based
it's got
on
nothing to do with it.
Yeah. Can we talk about the amateur?
Yes. Before we do that, Bubba Watson and Cam Champ this week might have had a little tender back when they did not come back to play their final four holes to miss the cut on Saturday morning. So it happens quite a bit here. That amateur that you're referring to, Mega, right?
Yep. Mega Gane. Gane?
Gane. Yeah.
Mega Gane.
17-year-old Stanford commit.
I can't speak. I joked about this on Twitter on Saturday. She's more composed as a 17-year-old contending for the U.S. Women's Open than I am writing 300 words about Jon Rahm withdrawing from a tournament. It's unbelievable. She was awesome. She was so – like her swing is very unique. It's really good. And she was just there's such a – there's such an innocence – right? When it's you're 17, you're playing a U.S. Women's Open. I thought somebody said this. I think it might have been Doug Gottlieb about the 2011-12 Thunder when they had Durant, Harden, and Westbrook. There's an innocence there that even if you win all the titles in the world, you can't replicate. You can't get that innocence back. And I thought it was just, it's so much fun to watch somebody like that because it's almost like an out of body, out of mind experience that you're watching, and they won't appreciate it for 5 more years, 10 more years. And I just thought I couldn't get enough. I thought she was phenomenal to watch. She shot 77 on Sunday or whatever, but you know, playing in the final group there as a 17-year-old, it's the coolest thing. It was kind of like who was it in 12? Bo Hassler that played in like the second to last group
at Olympic.
On Sunday?
He was leading.
It was a little bit like that on the women's side. So I thought it was cool.
How about that Stanford the other ladies thing about- golf team? They got Rachel Heck, who just won as a freshman, the individual, Rose Zhang, and now Megan Agane is going Megan, there. That's, yeah. I mean, it's going to be like a dynasty.
They're going to be like the 2018 Oklahoma State men's team with Wolf and Victor Hovland.
The other thing about just Mega. Like just like that. Mega Greg, is there's this great video where she was at a first tee clinic 6 years ago. She was 11 years old and she's meeting Jordan Spieth, and then they interview her afterwards and she's just like beaming, right? Glowing. She asked this question to Jordan Spieth, and then she finally says, you know, he's so young and he's the number one player in the world, and if he can do it, I think I can do it too. And here she is, final group at the U.S. Women's Open. I mean, it's an awesome story.
You saw the same beaming smile when she finished a round today on 18, and she had just tapped in for 77, and it looked like she won. I mean, she was so happy, and it was genuine happiness. It's probably a little bit of that innocence Kyle was speaking of, but she really enjoyed a special week. She got a lot of support from the fans, which was great and well-deserved, but she really appreciated it. And I think that was it was really cool because, I don't know, it looks like she started to appreciate it now, even though it probably won't sink in for a little while. But yeah, really cool to watch, an infectious smile, and what a player.
All right, gentlemen. Well, we've got to do our odds and ends, which includes a betting card update and a one and done update. And let me tell you, you're going to want to stick around for this. There was some movement finally from the team in the one and done. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
And we're back. Let's do a betting card update, gentlemen, and I can make this very quick. We stick. We all lost our best bets. Mark, I'm not even sure you submitted bets, so you are de facto the winner because we are terrible. So you by exclusion, won this week.
That's good news because I've been sucking anyway, so I'd rather not play, to be honest with you.
We had a rough one. Although
you're like Shin Chen.
Are you
Feng.
Resting your back? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look. I mean, I know we're playing with house money and sort of stuff. But if this was my wallet, and I was looking at my winning clip here in this thing, I would be the most morose human being you could ever lay eyes on. So that's sort of where my mindset is.
have an obligation to Mark Immelman betting fans to continue to pump out your $100 bets every single week. Okay, one and done update. We had some movement, but it was not from Coach, who's at the bottom. He is at 2.5 million. Greg, he used Victor Hovland. He got $26,000. And over the course of Coach's last seven events, he's got a total of 88,000. We should have spotted him a couple million instead of just one.
Yeah. It's looking that way. Oh, man. I mean, to use Victor Hovland, who I think was a great pick, I can't really give him credit. I sigh in disappointment for him. It's tough because Victor Hovland, he's perfect for this week, but yeah, it didn't work out. So that's a little bit, that one stings a little bit.
Jacob, open your mic, please, because also perfect for this week was Kyle Stanley, who ended up getting $33,000 for Jacob. It moves him to $3.7 million. He's in a tier by himself. And Jacob, how excited were you when Stanley was two under? I think he was two under through his first three holes, and everybody on the internet was freaking out about it.
Well, Stanley was the free space this week in DraftKings. So, you know, obviously that's who the one and done play was going to have to be. And you know, you peep the scoreboard on Thursday morning, Thursday afternoon, and you see him in the top 10, and it's Vince.gif already. I mean, I know he's at least making the cut, which is, you know, really all I can ask for at this point. But I will say not too disappointed to see my man Patrick Cantlay when, you know, back in January, I threw a couple of bucks on him to win the PGA Tour money list this season. So, you know, this Memorial, huge. I think I got him at 15-1. So, you know, this we're celebrating in the Halleck's household tonight.
Hey, can we just do a check? Are we sure Jacob didn't already play Kyle Stanley? I was surprised to see he still had him on the board.
I don't have to check.
I'm teasing.
Cantlay is now third on the money list, 5.3 million, just 500,000 behind Bryson DeChambeau. Jacob, all right, holding the ticket.
That's Bryson's live. Going in the wrong way right now, so you know.
It's live. There you go. It's definitely live. Greg, you're up next, 6.7 million. You went with Gary Woodland this week, and he earned you $0. So you stay right at 6.727. You're in a bit of there's a couple of us who are in a rough stretch right now. You as well. Four of your last tournaments, you've earned 128,000, and you are falling from that middle pack. You gotta, there's a lot of money to be made though. So still plenty of time.
Yeah, there's still big events to go. I still have a chance. I'm in that kind of no man's land right now where I'm very safe from the seller. Which is not where you want to be. I mean, quite safe from that. But at Coach the same time, I'm so out of touch from Rick.
Coach could pick the U.S. Open and the Open Championship, and you'd be in trouble.
Yes, he could, I suppose. But that doesn't feel like a, you know, a threat right now, to be honest.
Coach is not a threat.
He could pick the U.S. That's Open and the Open Championship winner and still not catch Greg. Because if it was $2 million each, he'd be at 6.5.
Yeah, so you're probably right.
I'm not too worried about the seller. And at the same time, I feel like I've let the lead slip away. I'm now at that point where, well, I guess winning a major could put me on top. I'd need a little bit of help. So, you know, I'm in that no man's land right now. I need a spark. I need, I don't know, maybe something different. I don't know.
Kyle, you looked for a spark.
You sound like you're.
That sounds like Rory.
You need a vacation or something.
Yeah. I just need a coaching change.
Yeah, I had Keegan Bradley, so just skip me. I did have a question. Well, two things. One, I did Vince GIF on Saturday night. That didn't go well.
How many times did you get wrong with
it? I think the last one was Finau at Phoenix. I might have had one in between those.
No, you did Phil at the PGA, I thought, didn't you?
Yeah, but you won it. Right.
Yeah, I'm saying, when's the last time
you did on the 17th hole?
Yeah.
What?
I'm saying, when is the last time that Kyle tweeted the Vince Carter.gif for a player, presumably whoever was in first, and that person did not win? So when he tweeted out the PGA Championship, Phil was in the lead. He held on. He waited very long to do it, but it was fine. So the last time we think was what? Finau at Phoenix when Webb got him?
I think there was one in between there, but I can't remember. Well, I did it for Spieth and at San Antonio, which got a little questionable there on 18. I don't know. I think I screwed up. That's part of the thrill of it. I was going to ask, do you think Vince will go into the Hall of Fame and will that be his statue? Is him doing that?
Should his bust? It should not just be the head, not just be the shoulders, but it should extend down to his arms.
Yeah, have his arms up there. That would be awesome. I'm gonna campaign for that.
We could have it made. We could like crowdsource it. Whether it's in the Hall of Fame or not, we could just have it made and we can send it to you and you can put it in your background.
That would be awesome. That would be even better. I don't care about the Hall of Fame. I just care about what's back here.
We could probably get some nerd on the internet to 3D print it for cheap.
I screwed that one up, but in my defense, he would have won by like 9. So I'm not too heartbroken over it.
Keegan Bradley got you $0. I'm ashamed to say he also got me $0. I am in the midst of a devastatingly poor stretch, and Mark has finally taken advantage of it. There was a lot of weeks there, Mark, where you had an opportunity, and it didn't go so well for you either. Me neither, but you are the winner this week. You got Colin Morikawa, $1 million for finishing second, which is thanks, Tiger. $1 million for finishing second. You have now closed the gap. You are at $7.9 million and a mere $250,000 behind me. With what do we have? 12 events to go, something like that.
I think it's 11. It's 11 now, isn't it?
Might be right.
Tell you, it can't come fast enough. We're starting to see the effects of the super season really weigh in here, right?
Well, you bring up a good point because, like you say, Coach could win both major champions. He's blown every blue chip golfer already for $2.5 million.
Yeah, he doesn't have another winner.
Yeah, so you got to so it's about what bullets in the chamber now, and the discipline of hanging on to Morikawa for this event. You know, sometimes they don't work out. I'll happily take second, although I was a little aggro when he didn't pull the playoff win off. But if you had, in our moot podcast Saturday evening, I was like, I'll happily take second for Morikawa and take the one and done money. So I'm looking forward to the last few weeks because we can just navigate a little bit here. That 250,000, I'm in your rear view, Rick.
I think it is so hilarious when Mark starts to get all excited about this. So as they were going to a playoff, Mark texts us in the group chat and says, Rick, who are you rooting for here?
And I said, I've said this time and time again. I define my year by what happens in the one and done league. This is me. This is my one. This is how I get excited.
All right, fair enough. Lots of golf left to be played. Producer Jacob has something, and he's going rogue because I have no idea what this is. Jacob,
This is going to be a rules update, like what happened to Morikawa on 17 today.
I'm about to go whisper into Mark's ear and tell him he's been withdrawn from the one and done league. Coach is very adamant that for the next season we make this. We up the ante a little and throw some cash in here. So I have a question for the class while he's not here. Do we think he's trying to sandbag us by just staying at the bottom here?
No.
I mean, okay. That's honestly like, that's the only explanation to picking Sepp Straka in week 3.
Can I read you? Okay. So he used Sepp Straka. I'm so glad you brought this up, Kyle. Sepp Straka in week 3. He has also used, and remember, he came in 11 events in, so he had everybody left. Sepp Straka, Russell Henley, he has used Bryce Garnett, Danny Willett, Adam Hadwin, and then he used Kisner and Brown.
Hey, take it easy on Hadwin with Coach in the chat here.
So if he's sandbagging, he's doing a great job. He's too
has he ever taken
sandbag.
Paul Casey? Has he taken Paul Casey?
I thought we had money.
Does that sound like a sandbagger? Does that sound like a sandbagger to you? I don't buy it.
What I would
we'll see how much cash he wants to put up.
But what I'd like to see is who has who available for the last stretch run here. That would be a cool spreadsheet to put out there.
I've still got the Pitt boys. I got Brooks and Bryson.
I've got Kyle Stanley for Torrey Pines.
I've got
Scott Stallings, I think I have available.
Scott Stallings is great at Torrey.
What are we doing for the Tour Championship? Are we taking Jacob? What are we doing? Are we taking? We can't take the 15 million or whatever.
Yeah, let's treat it like an elevated status event. So let's do it just like the Memorial this week. So I'll save the money table from this event.
So first through 30 of which leaderboard?
Yeah, so we're putting in fake numbers for a fake leaderboard.
It's got to be the shadow leaderboard.
It's got to be the shadow. We'll do the shadow leaderboard.
Okay.
What's no. I've been saving Justin Thomas the entire season for this because he's going to be near the top of the leaderboard.
He's still going to be the fake.
You guys dare do that stuff. That is,
you should have played him at the players.
We are an OWGR sponsored podcast, not a FedEx Cup sponsored podcast.
All right. JT for me at the US Open. Damn it. There we go.
All right. There you go. So I think we just decided shadow leaderboard and top 30 payouts from the Memorial is what we will use for the Tour Championship for now until that changes later. Gentlemen, Memorial Week is over. We look forward to the Palmetto Championship at Congaree and then, of course, the US Open. But before we get out of here, any final thoughts? Kyle always likes
to. Yeah, I didn't get to do Cantlay just real quick on him. I thought it was fitting that he beat that it was him who kind of slid in behind Rom because he's probably the most forgotten guy in the top 10. Maybe you guys already talked about all of this, but he's just the guy that you're like, oh yeah, he's not a chest thumper. He's not, you know, he's not tweeting all the time. He's just really, really good and he's easy to forget about. So I thought it was kind of fitting that he was the one that ended up beating Rom.
I'm pretty sure he is the highest ranked player. Oh, he does have a Twitter. This must be new. Oh yeah, joined in August of 20. For a long time, he did not have a Twitter.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So
it's not that exciting. You should not follow him. Okay. No. You should follow everybody else though. You should follow Mark Immelman at Mark_Immelman. You should follow Greg Ducharme at The Real GFD. You should follow Kyle Porter at Kyle Porter CBS. Producer Jacob does all the hard work behind the scenes. You can follow me at Rick Run Good. We'll be back on Monday. We'll be back on Tuesday. We'll see you then. Goodbye.
Docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.